Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 291, and well, yep, you knew it was coming. We're going to talk about, gas prices, but there might be some hope in this, maybe? We're also going to talk about a great resource if you're visiting a European city and want to do a tour for free. And we're going to talk a bit about windmills and solar. Maybe you shouldn't do solar. Maybe you should do a windmill. Or maybe not. We will get to it. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. I am freshly back from a tour of the Windward Islands of Barbados and Grenada and St. Vincent and St. Lucia and some little islands like Beckway and Union Island. And I had a fabulous time, as did my wife. We were sailing on the Royal Clipper, the world's largest sailing vessel that is in service. It's 5 masts and 42 sails, and indeed, the thing did sail under wind power. At one time, the captain told us that 72% of our journey had been done simply with wind. And why not 100%? Well, because schedules have to be maintained, and the wind isn't always there, so they supplement with their diesel engines, which I think is just fine. We were using a whole lot less diesel than any of the other ships out there, I can tell you that. Just in the time that I recorded the last few episodes, gas prices have gone a little crazy. And if you're not from the U.S., you're also feeling the gas prices. This is a worldwide phenomenon. But in the U.S., people are freaking out because, as of today, March 25th, the national average price for a gallon of gasoline is $3.98, which sounds like a lot to the people from the U.S. and sounds like free gasoline to the rest of you, because I know some of you are paying $9 a gallon and more, and you don't understand why fuel is so cheap in the U.S. And that is a very long, complicated conversation, but basically the U.S. has evolved to be a car culture. Everyone's expected to have a car, and in other cities that is not the case, and there's a whole lot to talk about there, but we're not going to talk about it. Instead, we're going to talk about the reality of sudden increased gas prices that may have upended plans for folks. I mean, if you had planned a big road trip this year, the gas costs or diesel costs are going to be significantly more than you planned. The diesel costs, never mind gasoline, diesel on average right now is $5.37. That's the average in the U.S. per gallon. And that's up just since yesterday. A year ago, it was only $3.60 a gallon. And you know what else is odd? We have this product in the U.S. called E85, which means ethanol 85%. So the gasoline's actually 85% ethanol, which comes from corn that we grow here in the U.S. It's only 15% petroleum. Well, last year about this time, E85 cost $2.60 a gallon. Right now, as of today, it's $3.16 a gallon. So it is another big increase, even though it's corn. So it's all interconnected and it's all kind of crazy. And anyway, we are having to deal with it. And so that's what we're going to do. By the way, these are not the record high prices. Those were set back in 22 as we were coming out of the pandemic. The regular unleaded high price of all time is $5.02, and the all-time high diesel was $5.81. So, yeah, it can go up more. It can. So knowing that we live in a time of uncertain fuel prices and what Americans consider high fuel prices especially, what can you do to save your summer or whatever plans you might have? I mean, some of you are doing this all the time and gas prices are constantly an issue. Some of you have a big trip planned and now suddenly your budget's thrown off. What can you do to mitigate it? And I do not have any silver bullets for you, but what I do have is some resources and some perspective, which is always a very important thing. And the first perspective to share is simply that gas is cheap in the U.S. People living in the U.S. might not think that, but it is super cheap here. Just travel to Europe and do the math. You know, they charge by the liter there. Do the math and you will see that gas is still really inexpensive in the U.S. compared to other countries. Even Canada. Canada pays a lot more for gas than we do. Why is that? There's a whole lot of reasons. There's taxes and there's subsidies and there's just general volume. We use a lot of gas here. It's a very complex issue that very, very smart people study and disagree on. So I've got nothing to add to that other than it's complex. Now, we are uniquely vulnerable to gas prices in our van life thing because a lot of us drive big, heavy vehicles that use a lot of gas. Folks out there driving a Prius are probably annoyed at the higher gas prices, but it's not a huge line item for them. But I can tell you that if I still had my 2004 Land Rover Series 2 Discovery that got 11 miles a gallon on premium gas, and you had to use premium, ouch, that would have hugely impacted my budget. And I know folks in their old Econolines are not getting the best gas mileage out there. And in my truck, my 2019 1500 Classic, Ram 1500 Classic, I'm constantly seeing in forums about people trying to get rid of all the eco-friendly stuff to basically get less gas mileage. It's confusing to me that even though the engine is set up that you don't lose power when you need it, people want to get that out of there because they see it as bad, but they're lowering their gas mileage by as much as 10 miles per gallon. I don't get it. Our recent times, however, may change their opinion on that. So one key thing to look at is you can't beat gas prices. I mean, we'll talk about some things that you might be able to get some discounts here and there, but the gas price is completely out of your control. You don't control it. There's nothing you can do to make gas prices go up or down. So it's you that has to change. You have to adapt your behavior. And how you do this is up to you, but one clear thing to do is change your plans such that they don't use as much gasoline. If you had a 2-week trip planning where you would go to 8 stops, well, keep it a 2-week trip, but maybe don't do 8 stops. Maybe do 4. Maybe only go half as far as you thought you were going to go. You will still have a great trip. It just won't cost you as much in gas. And another thing, and this is obvious, but I don't think people realize the impact. Driving slower has a huge impact on gas mileage. In general, most vehicles get optimum fuel distance at about 50 miles an hour. There's some variances there, but at 50 miles an hour, you're in the highest gear and you're using the least amount of fuel, so you're getting the most miles per gallon at that speed. If you go up to 60, it can go down by as much as 25%. If you go up to 70, again, it's logarithmic. The faster you go, the higher the impact. At 80 miles an hour, while you're really not doing too good on the wind resistance thing, and don't forget, we're driving bricks here. We're not driving Formula One race cars. So speed really matters. I tend to drive the speed limit these days in my later years, and with my ponderous vehicles, that's pretty much where I will stick it. If it's 65, I'm going to go 65, maybe 70, depending on how the traffic's moving. I am not trying to get there as fast as possible. I'm trying to be as optimal as possible in balancing my resources, which are, to be clear, money and time. Those are the two resources. I will spend money to save time, but I will also take time to save money. It really depends on the situation. The other thing that costs a lot of fuel mileage is hills, going up and down hills. You will get less fuel mileage driving in the Rockies than you will in other places. And that's okay. If you haven't seen the Rockies, go see the Rockies. It's just money. The heck with it. And, you know, you put it in perspective, if you're paying 25% more for fuel or even 50% more for fuel, that's just a line item. And if it comes out to be $200 more on a trip that you've budgeted $2,000 for, let's say, okay, I mean, that sucks, but you can do it. You can still have your trip. And imagine the impact on your life if you don't do the trip because it's going to cost an extra $200 versus if you do the trip and it costs $200 more. Afterwards, you're either going to be upset that you didn't take the trip at all and darn those politicians, whatever, or you're going to say, well, the trip was a little bit more money than I wanted to spend, but we had a great time. Which of those two things sounds better to you? So let's talk about some of the basics for what you can do to save as much gas as possible while you're driving. Tire pressure, make sure your tire pressure is where it should be. If it's too low, you will use more fuel because there's more friction on the tires. That's why you lower your tires when you go off-road, so you can have more friction. But for mileage on the highway, you want your tires pumped up as high as is recommended by the tire manufacturer, and you can find those numbers on the door jamb of your vehicle. Those are the numbers you should be looking at, unless you're using tires that are wildly out of spec for the vehicle. In that case, you can look at what says on the tire, but you're going to have to figure it out. Also, try to have nothing on the roof. Yes, here I am telling the van life people to have nothing on the roof. No max air fans, no air conditioners, no boxes, nothing up there. No roof racks. I mean, the reality is that anything you put on the roof is going to lower your miles per gallon. If the roof is completely flat and clear of things, that is going to give you the best mileage possible. We do have lives to lead. We do have power to generate. We do have ventilation needs. So you have to balance there. If you have something on the roof that doesn't need to be there, take it off. A truck box on the roof is going to lower your fuel mileage a lot more than one that is attached to your bumper hitch. So just consider that. Also, if you haven't built out your rig yet, if you're just at the point of deciding what kind of a rig you want, this is a major reason to not get the full-size van. If we live in a time of high fuel prices or fluctuating fuel prices, your expense for doing van life can increase much more dramatically if you have a full-size van than if you have, say, a minivan or a car even. And it's simply because these vehicles use more gas. And if you're using more of something that is volatile, that's going to impact your trips more. So even in my case, where I went from a 2011 Sprinter to a 2019 Ram 1500 pickup truck, the money saved in fuel is dramatic. Seriously. The Sprinter used diesel, which is already higher, and you had to add DEF, which is another fluid that you have to pay for, and it got about 18 miles per gallon. My truck uses, you're supposed to use mid-grade, but it'll run fine on the low-grade gasoline, and I've gotten as much as 24 miles a gallon in it, although that goes down dramatically if I put the truck camper on. So for me, I mean, if you have a choice of buying a vehicle, gasoline again wins, because the longer this fuel craziness goes on, basically I'm saying as long as this war goes on, the harder it's going to be for folks in large vehicles. Of course, you're giving up a whole lot of space there and maybe some comfort. You know, there's always trade-offs. But I would like to drill this into everybody's heads. When you are building out your vehicle, don't forget to consider the cost of fuel. Schoolies look great. I mean, look at all that space you have in a schoolie. And yeah, it might be hard to park. And, you know, it's going to be a little ponderous on the highway. You're not going to really get up to speed very quickly. All that's true. You can put a hot tub in a schoolie much more easily than in a Prius. There's no question about that. But the fuel costs are going to be a major issue when they fluctuate. And they will. And you can't do anything about that. One way to save fuel is to go to van life events rather than tour on your own. Simply because you're parked. You have a good experience. It is an authentic van life experience. But you're hanging out with friends rather than driving around and looking at scenery. That's going to save you a lot of fuel. It may not be what you want to do. I'm just pointing it out. So let's talk about ways to, like, save some money. So GasBuddy is the first thing that comes up. And here's the deal with GasBuddy. If you've not encountered GasBuddy, it is a website and an app that will list fuel prices. And you can go on there and say, okay, I'm in Ashtabula, Ohio. I need fuel. Where's the cheapest place to get fuel? And it will have very up-to-date information on fuel prices at the different stations. And that's great. That's a good service. And they're reported by people who use the stations. They ask you if you go to a station to update the pricing. And so many people use this that it's actually pretty accurate. I find no flaw in that. However, the company GasBuddy has a bad reputation for data theft and things like that. If you use their app, they will record as much as they can and they will sell it for profit. And you might not like that. Also, they have their own weird credit card thing where you buy gas directly in the app. And then when you get to the pump, you use a special card. I did that for a little bit. it turned into a hassle. Sometimes the card didn't work. And again, they're collecting all this data on you, which you may not want. So if you are going to use GasBuddy, I recommend you use the website in an incognito or private browsing mode and just get the numbers you need and get off. That way they're not going to have anything on you and you'll still get the information you primarily want. Another way to do this is AAA. AAA also has the up-to-date gas price things, and their model is a membership model, and a lot of this stuff is available for free anyway. You don't actually need a membership to see their gas prices, but that is another way you can do it. However, remember that every time you drive somewhere, you're costing money. So while the interstate gas stations might be more expensive than the gas station in town 10 miles away, you're going to have to drive a total of 20 miles to get to that place that has cheaper gas, and that takes up time, and you're burning gas to get there. And time, again, I'm going to keep saying this, time is a resource. Here in Chicago, I live near a Costco, and there's always a line for the Costco gas, because Costco gas is often the cheapest. But the line is so long that I question whether it's worth it. I mean, if people wait half an hour to save 5 cents a gallon on gas, well, you do the math there, you know. Is your time worth that much? Because I'll tell you, I'm not willing to waste that time in line doing that. And one last thing. In the U.S., the government has turned against electric vehicles, and now we're going to see why that was a bad idea. The rest of the world is seeing this gas problem and thinking, yep, EV is the way to go. Let's get EV. And people are looking to buy EVs. Good for you if you own an electric vehicle. It has just gone up in value simply because people are looking more to EVs, not only to reduce their driving costs, but also to induce stability. It's much more easy to predict the cost of electricity. And that's one of the big problems here. It's not so much that the price of gas is high, although of course that's a concern. It's the volatility. It's really hard to plan when you don't know how much your costs are going to be. And EVs help flatten that curve. But in the U.S., all the subsidies are gone, and you know the government has decidedly turned against electric vehicles for no reason that I can fathom. So even though I keep seeing BrightDrop vans built out, they're not being made anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what the future holds, and nobody does. And anyone who says they do is probably trying to sell you something. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just trying to help you get on the road and have the best possible van life you can. So do it. Don't let the gas prices stop you from doing this. Adapt your behavior to kind of surf this wave of uncertainty. But don't forget what your primary goal is. It's to get out there on the road and live a life. And high gas prices can't stop you from doing that unless you let them. And thank you to James for buying me, well, 3 gallons of beer. Well, thanks, James. That's an awful lot of beer to drink. But I appreciate it, and I appreciate everyone who has visited buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go and bought me some gallons of whatever liquid you would like. Heck, it doesn't even have to be liquid. I don't care. This is the way we keep ads off the podcast. People go to this website and do a one-time donation that basically replaces the ad revenue I would be getting if I ran ads. And that helps pay for the hosting and some of my experiments and all that. And I appreciate it. I especially appreciate the folks who do this every single month. If you would like to help support the podcast and keep ads off of here, which we've done very well so far, please visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. I thank you, and even though you can't hear them, I know everybody out there is thanking you too, because, go ahead folks, say it right now to your podcast player, whatever it may be, say, thank you for not having ads on the podcast. Oh, I hear them right now. Thank you, everyone. Tech Talk. So, it seems like everybody who's building out a van goes through this phase where they're like, solar, you know, everyone's got solar, but, you know, it takes up space on the roof and I got to drill holes. I don't want to drill holes. And I'm like, oh, what about windmills? What if I had a windmill to generate power? I mean, if you're driving through Illinois, in central Illinois, the whole state's covered with windmills. They're generating tons of power. And if you look at a lot of pictures of sailboats in the Caribbean, they've got windmills too. So this clearly works. Why don't I use a windmill for van life? And a lot of people try it. Well, maybe not a lot. Hopefully more people actually go and watch the YouTube videos of the people who've tried it. And what they have found is it doesn't work. I mean, it does work, but it's tricky. You basically need to get the windmill 30 feet above your van, or 10 meters about, in order to put it in a place where it's going to get enough wind to do any good. I know that sounds crazy. It's windy out. Why can't I just put it on the ground? Because that wind is not going to keep going. You need to get it above everything for a steady wind that's going to keep powering your stuff. Also, they make noise. They do make noise. I don't think they cause cancer. Let's not go that far. But they do make noise, and some people might not like that. And still, I will say this, and people will be like, no, I know it works. In fact, there's this new product that just came out that it'll do wind power, or you can stick it in a river, and it will do hydropower. Well, yes, that device does exist, but considering the logistics of things, most of the time you're parking, you're not going to be near a stream that you can use. And if you have a place that you park all the time, where that stream is always available and always flowing, you could build a stationary hydroelectric thing a lot that would work a lot better than this device. And here's some proof that I'm correct about this windmill thing for van life. 20 years ago, if you went into a marina in the Caribbean, where I just spent a lot of time in them recently, every single sailboat, or most of them, would have a windmill on the back. Now, windmills make a lot of sense for sailboats, because where sailboats are, by definition, is where the wind is. And out in the ocean, there are these things called the trade winds, where the wind blows pretty constant. Sailboats like to use them to get from place to place. And the wind blowing on the sailboat, there's plenty left over to power that windmill. So a lot of sailboats had windmills. But on my most recent trip down there, and all the marinas I was in, I saw just a handful of windmills. And so what changed? Why are sailboats using less and less wind power for electricity? And the answer is solar. Sailboats, which have easy access to wind, a lot of people are looking at their power problem and realizing that solar panels actually are the better deal. Even though you don't get solar power at night, on a sailboat, you can use solar power to cover the roof of your cockpit or just set up platforms covered with solar, and that is more reliable and produces more power overall than the windmills. The other thing that people miss about windmills is that they have moving parts, and moving parts wear out, so they need more maintenance. And, you know, and especially in an ocean environment, any kind of motor that's exposed to the elements is going to need a lot of maintenance because salt water is very corrosive. Solar panels just kind of sit there. They don't make any noise. And given that they're so much less expensive now, and they're so simple, meaning that there's very few things that can go wrong with them. And, this is a bonus, they generate shade. If you put solar panels on your roof, you are generating shade on your roof, and that helps keep things cool. Solar panels are actually winning over the sailors who have the best access to wind power for windmills. Now, sure, some have both. I mean, why not be redundant? Whatever. But if you're new to van life and you are thinking about a windmill, don't. I mean, I'm just telling you that flat out. Go ahead and go on YouTube, watch the videos of the people who say that it works, and they're probably selling you something. And then watch the videos of the people who've done the long-term usage, and it's just not the way to do it. Solar beats wind power for van life every single time. Product review. Speaking of wind power, we're back to my obsession with fans. I don't know why. I love fans. I've always loved fans. And I have been recommending these stroller fans, these inexpensive stroller fans for van life, ever since I first discovered them about a year ago. And I still have a bunch of them, and I still use them all the time, and I still think they're great. But on a last-minute whim, I bought this other fan, and I just used it extensively on my trip, and I love it. Yeah, I love it. I mean, are there fans that I don't love? Yeah, there probably are. But this one, well, let me tell you about it. This is a new type of fan that's hitting the market. It's called a turbo fan, and it's a small fan that is basically a battery bank. Essentially, it is the fan out of a hairdryer. So it's not a big fan. It's the size of a U.S. silver dollar, a Morgan dollar maybe, if you know what size that is. The size of a Ritz cracker. Do you like that better? I don't know. Americans can't ever use real measurements. We have to measure things in like bananas and stuff. So let's say a Ritz cracker. And that's a little tiny fan, right? But it's incredibly fast. And it just blows air, not quite a laminar flow, but in a very direct way. And that's enough for me to sleep comfortably at night, which is my main reason for loving fans. Also, you can wear these. They come with a strap that goes around your neck and clips in, and you can wear it on your chest with the fan blowing right in your face. And there was a time in Barbados where I had to wait in line for an hour, and I loved having that thing. It really made it more comfortable. Yeah, people might have been looking at me funny, but not too many. I'm like old white tourist guy in the Caribbean. You know, I'm not fooling anybody. I'm allowed to do all kinds of ridiculous stuff like that. The thing I really like about this fan is that it's battery powered and the battery will last all night long. In fact, it has a readout on it that tells you the percentage of battery. And I had it on for 10 hours one night on the low setting, which was enough. And I had 20% battery left. So as long as you charge it during the day, you know you have a fan that will blow on you all night long if that's what you want. Now, this one has a feature that I think is bizarre. It's got a fan, and in the middle of the fan, where the hub would be, there's a mirror, which, okay, I guess having a little mirror is handy, but that's not what it's for. It's not actually a mirror. It's a Peltier device. Peltier device is how thermoelectric coolers work. It is a solid-state device that when you apply current, one side gets hot and one side gets cool. And so basically, it makes this plate cold and then blows air over it. And at first I was very confused by this because air is blowing over this plate and one side's hot and one side's cold. The air temperature is going to be the same. It's going to cancel itself out. In fact, it'll probably be a little bit warmer because there's energy loss that comes out in the form of heat. So what is the point of this gimmicky thing? And I watched a couple of videos and the people trying to, you know, they were like the promo videos are like, oh, and it also acts like an air conditioner. No, 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 no. It doesn't. The point of the Peltier device is to create a cold plate. And no, I mean cold. When you turn this thing on, it starts to frost up almost immediately. You're supposed to rub your face with it. I don't know that I would ever want to do that, but the idea is that it's like an ice cube that you can use to rub your face, and it runs just off the battery of the fan. I never use it. In fact, they sell versions of this fan that don't have that feature, and I think if I were going to buy again, I might look at those. But I didn't test those, so I don't want to review them untested. Anyway, these things are about $20. You can use them on airplanes. You can use them in cars. You can use them waiting in line. You can use them on your nightstand. The head tilts, so you can find all different ways to have it blow on you. And it just charges with USB-C in a couple of hours, and it has a readout that tells you. Again, I love fans. My fan fanaticism really was rekindled with the Venti, and I thought that was the greatest thing ever, and I still love my Venti. But the Venti is bulky, and it takes up space if you're trying to travel minimally. It takes up too much space. This thing can fit in your pocket, and it does essentially the same thing. So I love it, and I'm probably going to buy another one because I basically don't ever want to be without it. So I have a link in Amazon. There's a bunch of companies making these. The one I am recommending is from a very strange named company, Play Hot. I think that's a terrible name for a fan, honestly, Play Hot. But it is the portable handheld turbofan with ice cooling, rechargeable personal fan, up to 12 hours cooling, 5-speed, 25,550 RPM, powerful portable fan for travel, outdoor camping, and hiking. And it's black. And it does come in other colors, too. Oh, there's a coupon now, actually. It's only $17.99 if you click on the coupon. Another use for this fan, by the way, is if you're trying to start a fire. You know how you, like, light the fire and it's not really going and you blow on it? Yeah, you don't have to blow on it anymore. Put this thing on high and point it at that little bit of a spark you have, and you'll have a fire pretty quick. Because on a high speed, you can blow things away with this. It's also a good cat deterrent. Did I happen to mention that? Maybe I shouldn't mention that. Never mind. I didn't say anything. Tales from the Road. So I was just in the Caribbean, And it's funny, I was on a bunch of tours, so I was in a bunch of different vans, and I'm always talking with the tour guide about the van and how they have such cool vans that we can't get. Oh, the Toyota vans they had High Aces and Pro Aces and some other kind, any of the Aces. I love all the Aces, and we can't get any of the Toyota Ace products in the U.S. Thank you, chicken tax. But talking with the guys about them and how much they love their vans, everyone down there, so far as I can tell, loves Toyotas. And there's a lot of diesels down there too, but most of them are gasoline, and that's fine. And the economics down there are a little weird because for years, the Southern Caribbean got their gasoline from Venezuela because it's really not that far away. And now Venezuela's all up in upheaval, etc. Don't have to delve too much into that. So I'm starting to think, well, how do these islands like St. Vincent and Grenada and such get their power? How are they powering their homes? And so I'm looking at it like from a van life perspective of, well, they're fairly close to the equator, so they're getting 11.5 to 13.5 hours of sunlight every day. And even though it rains a lot, it's sunny almost every day. You know, it's a rain shower type of thing. They must have solar everywhere. So I started paying attention, and they don't. There were a few bits of solar, but where I would expect them to have solar, like on most roofs, for example, or roofs, depending on how you want to pronounce that, they didn't. And at one point, we went to this chocolate factory up in the mountains of Grenada. Really good chocolate, by the way, and made in like almost by hand. I was kind of amazed by this. Usually we're going to go to the chocolate factory tour, and you know, you go and look at machines through windows, and then the gift shop's like three times larger than the tour. This wasn't like that. This was like they're hand picking the cocoa beans and drying them in the sun and then hand processing them, and then they sell the chocolate in the store, and I bought a bunch of it. It was really good. But they didn't have solar panels, even though they're using solar to dry the beans, which I'm like, guys, you've got the, it's all right here. You know, you've got all the pieces. Why don't you put it together? And then out in the parking lot, there was a big nutmeg tree. Grenada is like the nutmeg island. There's nutmeg everywhere, and it's on their flag even. And the tour guide, you know, picks a piece of nutmeg and shows us that the outer husk is mace and that the inside is what's actually the nutmeg and all that. And we learn all about that, and it's fine. It was good. It was all wonderful. But I noticed next to the tree a huge pile of cardboard boxes, and they're soggy. They've been sitting there a while, and I'm like, well, that's weird. And I go over and look at them. They're solar panels, maybe 10,000 watts worth of solar panels, clearly not made for a van, but made for a roof. And they're just sitting there, and no one's installed them, and I don't know how long. And it's like, so somebody's trying to get solar going down here, but they just haven't done it. So at this point, I'm like, well, if they're not really trying to do solar, then they must not need it, right? Because there's no urging on. So I wondered how they got their power. Some of these islands are heavily volcanic. Could they possibly be using geothermal? Maybe, like St. Lucia, where we went, they have an active volcano, and you can drive into it, and there's boiling mud and all kinds of stuff. Well, no. I was amazed when I found out how they get their power. They burn diesel. All these islands have big diesel-burning power plants, just like it's 1950, and that's where they're getting their power. Even though some of these islands are located in the trade winds, and they could use windmills, and all of these islands get tons of sunlight, I mean, this is way south of Florida, then that they're not using it. It's just like, it's frustrating because there's a clear situation where technology could really help folks, where power is actually a big problem. You know, as air conditioning gets more and more prominent and more tourists expect everything to be air conditioned, which wasn't always the case. They need more and more power, and they're burning diesel for it. And now the diesel prices have gone way up. It's going to cost everybody. And there's another aspect to this that came from another trip. I went to Roatan, which is an island off the coast of Honduras, which ironically was populated by the same peoples that used to live in the Southern Caribbean. When the Europeans came over, they forced all the people in the Southern Caribbean to move, those they didn't actually just kill with disease and outright violence. And where those people moved was primarily to Roatan, this island off the coast of Belize. So you had the Central American native population actually mix with the Southern Caribbean population of the Arawaks and Caribs and whoever else was down there. weird little fact, but in Roatan, I learned a very disturbing fact, which was that all their power processing on the entire island is owned by a guy in Texas. One guy. And he price gouges them unbelievably. Some of these houses, they're paying 50% of their income in power every month, and they're not air conditioned. It's sad and it's pathetic. So when you travel, you see things, and when you travel with a certain perspective, you see different things. And on this trip and a few others, I've been traveling on the perspective of how do these people live and how are they getting energy? And they're getting it in the worst possible way. And unfortunately, there is not enough power in the populace to change that. And there's not enough willpower in the governments to change that, because unfortunately, like many governments, they're going to chase whatever makes them the richest, not what makes their people the richest. And anyway, that's just kind of a commentary on the whole world at large. Resource recommendation. A bunch of people have mentioned this to me, so I'm going to mention it finally. Is Rick Steves. Rick Steves is a travel TV show guy, and I will admit, I didn't like him at first. I met him at a conference once, and he just seemed kind of smarmy to me. And I've told this to people, and they're like, Rick Steves? Smarmy? He's like the most honest guy ever. And I realized that I was projecting onto him something, or maybe it was just pure jealousy that he's got a life I would like to lead. I don't know, but I was wrong. Now that I've reevaluated him, I think Rick Steves is just an honest guy who wants people to travel and have a good time. He and I are on similar missions in a way, where I'm promoting van life for folks who want to do it. He's promoting travel for folks who want to do it. So I like Rick Steves, and I think he does a good thing. And one of the things he does that's good is he has recorded audio walking tours of major cities around the world. Not every city, but especially Europe. If you're going to Europe and you're going to go to any of the major cities, Rick Steves has audio tours that you can just download for free. And they're good. They're very good. Some of the cities covered are, well, I'll just read down here really quick. Vienna, Berlin, Munich, London, Edinburgh, Ireland, Prague, Paris, Ephesus, that's a good one. Rome, Florence, Milan, Lisbon, Amsterdam, Madrid, and so on and so on and so on. And he also has a bunch of walking tours you can read in his books. Now, he is not pushy with this stuff. He's not like, you know, giving you 40% of the story and then click here to buy the expanded. It's not like that. He's giving this to you just to help you have a good time in these countries. Now, their stuff is dated 2023, and they do get updated sometimes. So you have to take into account that it's 3 years later for some of these, and some of the things may have changed. But the typical tour will say, hey, go to this place and hit play when you get there and hit pause. Then it'll tell you about the building you're looking at or the plaza or some history. It's really cool, and it's free. It's free. So if you're traveling in Europe especially, actually, it looks like all they have right now is Europe. I might be missing a page, but major cities in Europe, definitely check it out. Rick Steves Audio Tours is all it's called, and they have an app. It's called the Rick Steves Audio Europe app. You can do that, and it also comes with maps. So in the app, you can listen, but it also bring up a map to show you where you're supposed to walk and stuff. Did I mention it's free? It's free. So that's a great resource. Well, folks, as a special gift here, I'm going to give you a little bit of conversation I had with Sherm, the RV tech we talked with a while back. When we did that interview, we kind of got off on a tangent that was welcome, but it was separate from everything else we were talking about. So I decided to save it and put it into this episode so that you can hear what we're talking about. And basically, we're going to have a conversation about content creation, the toll it takes, and what you have to do to be successful. And so here's that conversation.
I've been posting on a lot of different socials. I've got an Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and I have a Facebook page as well that's doing really well right now.
Excellent.
And not to toot my own horn about any of this, but that's rather great.
We're going to link it all in the show notes too, so don't feel like you have to remember stuff if you're
okay.
Listening.
Okay. Well, that's so nice. I'm so dang excited to be on this podcast, man. I've been listening for so long. And with my own content, I'm really just trying to get people out building on their own things. Mm-hmm. Because I find, especially working like a 9-to-5 job, it's really hard to set the time aside to work on your Yes. Your dreams for a big word, I guess.
Especially in your line of work, because, you know, you're underneath someone's cabinet rewiring stuff and like, oh boy, it's my free time. I think I'll go rewire stuff.
Exactly. It's a little tough to get out there and do the work, but it's feeding into my future. Me and my wife are holding off on a lot of things so we can do this road trip.
Excellent.
We want to try and travel around the entire U.S. That's the goal. Done a little bit of van life myself. I lived in my VW bus for 3 to 4 months. I was a whitewater raft guide out in the Tennessee Smoky Mountains. It was beautiful up there. Did some whitewater rafting. A lovely job. But with my content, I'm really just, with the little videos I post, I'm posting little shorts on Instagram and all of the other ones. I want to inspire people to get out and work on their stuff, because it's so hard to take the time for yourself to invest in something that you want to.
Yeah, true.
And so it's really important to me. I've struggled so hard. I've had burnout on my projects so much.
Oh yeah.
And so I've actually been working every single day on this project.
So how did you overcome burnout when it happens? Like, you're just like, I'm done with this, and you shut the door and you go back inside. How right. do you get back out there?
You have to make the baseline promise to yourself that you show up.
Yeah.
Period. That's all you do. So there's some days where I'll go out, and I am so fortunate to have the house that I'm at right now. There's so many hurdles just to being able to like work on your thing every day, just having the space to work on it, having the tools to work on it, having the money to work on it. And even though me and my wife make pretty basic money, we're no rich people. We're living paycheck to paycheck. And so I'm trying to prove that anybody in the basic line can do it.
Yeah, and I think they can. I absolutely can. You have an advantage of having, you know, you've dedicated your time to learning how to do this stuff, and you have a bunch of skills and probably tools at this point that a lot of people don't have, but you didn't start that way.
Absolutely not. No. Like, I got my van when I was 13 years old. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just started tearing wires out.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, as I grew up, and watching everybody on social media having their vans build out, and it's all in the one episode, and it's like they just did all of this stuff, and it gets overwhelming. You see everybody there's always something to be said about like having the perfect like presentation of yourself on social media. That I grew up in that age of like, we have connection to see everybody's best side all the time, and You try not to judge yourself based on that, but it's kind of hard sometimes, especially like when all of the everything is new.
Right.
I grew up in the golden age of YouTube. Like, everybody's posting about their lives and everything, and it's like, well, these people are so incredible and amazing. Why me?
Right.
And my inverse question is, why not you? Like,
that's
why
true.
Why can't you do it? Like, nobody told you to start a podcast. And right. look at you here. You're almost 300 episodes in. You've got this amazing community of self-DIY people who are sharing all of their knowledge in your Discord. Like, it's really inspiring.
Well, just to talk about that for a second, at no time ever in human history have you been more able to create content. It is so much less of a barrier. I mean, think of it like me growing up in the 70s and 80s. How could I have gotten content out? I could have done a typewritten newsletter that I mailed to folks, maybe a fanzine, but that's it. I couldn't get on the radio. I couldn't get on TV. There was no internet. None of that stuff existed. Now, all you need is a cell phone, and you can be on YouTube, Instagram, Reels, TikTok, have a podcast. You can do it all from your phone. So there, if this is something anybody wants to do, there are literally fewer barriers now than ever in human history.
I'm interested to hear your opinion on this, because this is something I've started struggling with a little bit. I have started making money on social media, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Yes, I'm in that boat too. Yeah.
I've kind of rationalized it in my head about how I make my videos, because the last thing I want to do is keep you glued to your screen. And that's the incentive, right? You want people to be glued to the screen so you make more money. But if you inspire people to get away from their screen, then the less people are seeing you telling them to get away from their screen. So I try to meet people like where they're at. And I think that's kind of the only way to do it. And I mean,
yeah, it's a tricky thing. So for me with the podcast, I had a very specific goal when I created the podcast. I wanted to create the kind of podcast I wanted to exist while I was building out my rig. Somebody talking about van life, a whole bunch of different topics all over the place that I could listen to while I'm gluing insulation to the walls of my van. That was the purpose, and I think I've done that. My goal was never to make a lot of money, and I don't think it's possible to make large amounts of money, I mean, enough money to support yourself even, with a podcast. You're competing against NPR. You're competing against, you know, the Joe Rogans and these professional radio people who have moved to podcasts now. I mean, they just have such an advantage over you, and people only have so much time. But that doesn't mean it's not worth doing. It's just podcasts specifically aren't for making money. YouTube, Reels, all that, that is where it's at right now. And you're right. The way you get paid is views and time. And so for me, if I were trying to make a living doing this, which I am not, I would make some very clear lines on what I was willing to do and wasn't willing to do. I would have a time limit. Every video is going to be 15 minutes. That's it. Something like that. I would say I'm only going to take product sponsorship from products that I personally have used and approved, which is something I do right now. I mean, I'm about to do another stereo for my Ram truck that I'm going to, you know, they sent it to me and I said, here's the deal. You're not going to pay me. You are going to send me the thing for free. I'm going to install it. I'm going to film it. I'm going to give you the content and I'm going to be honest about my opinion of it. That's my deal. And I tell them that up front, and a lot of them won't even send it to me once I just say that.
Right.
Big Rob, who we talk about on the podcast sometimes, he runs into this too, where they'll be like, write the review now, and then we'll send you the unit. You know, no.
What?
Yeah.
That's, no. What? Okay. Yeah,
it's completely dishonest. Or buy it from Amazon and give it a 5-star review in a video, and then we'll reimburse you. That's another thing that goes on. So I'm not doing any of that. I will not. My integrity or whatever will not allow me to do that. As for the rest of it, there's nothing wrong with making money by giving people content. I mean, that's what every author and director has done throughout history. That is totally legitimate, but you have to set your own rules. Who are you? What are you trying to accomplish? If what you're trying to accomplish is to make as much money as possible, then I'm probably not going to consume your content.
Right. And I mean, that's the Mr. Beast of the world, right?
Exactly.
And I mean, I guess he succeeded because he was very honest with what he wanted to do. And he found the way of chasing that.
At the right time. You couldn't do that now. I don't think you can create another Mr. Beast right now.
No, I don't believe so. He had the perfect storm going on.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can't deny I would absolutely love to be able to like work on my van full time and also like inspire people to do the same. But it removes that little bit of like authenticity of like, this is the guy who is working a full-time job and then comes home and then does the thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm having this weird balance of that. And not that I'm anywhere near being able to do that. Like I have just started, I have maybe like $5 saved up on Facebook right now. Like that's where I'm at.
But that's how you start, you know?
Right.
And, do you know Rain Man Ray by any chance?
Rain Man Ray? I do not.
Oh, so Rain Man Ray is a YouTube guy. And he was working, he's not dissimilar from you, except he's an automotive tech. And he was working for one of the big chains of automotive repair places. And he started filming it. It's very honest. He wears a head cam and he's like, he's fighting with this bolt and he's complaining about how our previous tech did something wrong, blah, blah, blah. And people started watching the content. And then his employer found out that he was doing this and they didn't like some of the things he said because, you know, honesty. They fired him. Well, actually, they didn't fire him. They said, either you stop doing the YouTube or you're fired. So he said, well, he quit because the YouTube was actually making him more money than his employment. So what does he do with that? He starts his own shop. And now he's doing great. And he is a guy who is literally doing what you want to do. He isn't padding his videos. He isn't even promoting products or anything. He's literally just recording what he does and sharing his expertise with the world. And he's making that work. To me, that's a good model.
I like that. I've written his name down. Raymond Ray.
Yeah. He's Florida guy. He just general mechanic, basically, which is a rare thing to find these days. Holy cow. I wish I could find a reliable one in Chicago.
It is hard.
Yeah. So anyway, I encourage you and you know, everybody that it is very difficult to think I'm going to build out a van and hit the road and become a YouTube star. You can. But don't think it's not a job. It's work. It's a business. You have to treat it that way. A Wonder Hussy is another one I mentioned sometimes. It is her job to go around and film herself in the desert Southwest. And she treats it like a job. But she doesn't do it dishonestly. you can do this honestly. And that's a big line for me. If I detect honesty, I'll watch. As soon as I see it's not there, I'm gone.
And see, that's something that Big Rob talked about on his podcast episode he did for Built to Go. I remember that. It's just about the honesty about creating content and being able to do that and make money off of it. And it's possible. It really is. And it's just the personal ethics of people tend to get in the way in the best ways. Yeah. Right. Because it's the weird part about you'd made the comparison to TV and, mm-hmm. Movies. It's these people are literally making something. So that way you spend money to go spend your time there.
Yeah.
And your time's worth that. And then there's also the pre-reel ads and whatnot, that get extra money and stuff. And that's the extra incentive, right? So being able to rationalize that a little bit and becoming almost my own entertainment center is definitely helps with the ethos of it a little bit. And I always try and include my videos hey, look, don't forget to go work on your own project. Please go out and do your own thing. Don't just sit here and watch me do this.
Yeah.
I want to hear about what you have going on too.
Right.
And gosh, it's like a second job at this point. Cause I had this problem recently where me and my wife, I was sitting in bed editing a short because I posted every single day for 2 months mm-hmm. and it's exhausting.
It is.
I'm sitting at my job. I will go out in the afternoons, I'll do the work. The next morning, I wake up, I write a script, I record the voice lines, I go to work on my hour lunch break, I edit my short, I come home, I have to post it, and then I have to go out and work on the bus again. And then it's rinse, repeat. And I did that for 2 months, no weekends off, just same thing every time.
Yep.
And me and my wife finally, we had this freeze come through, and it's I actually can't, I physically cannot go work on the bus today.
Right.
I can't do that. And so we took this awesome trip to New Orleans and we did some rock climbing over there and we didn't get too bad of a freeze down here, fortunately. Mm-hmm. But we finally took a day to ourselves and we went rock climbing. I missed that so much.
Right.
And so being able to make this, I've been building up to try and make this into a second job if I can, because that's obviously that's the dream.
You can.
But being able to I don't know. There was always a weird sit in my stomach about telling people to go out and do their things, but at the same time, profiting off of their time. It just felt weird to me.
Yeah. You got to get over that a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I have the same thing, right? So, I do my only source of income, which is, it's not income. It just covers expenses really, is buymeacoffee.com, which is the simplest, easiest, someone gives you $5 and that's it. And you say, thank you. And that's good. That's perfect. That's all I want. And that allows me to not have ads because the way I was doing before to pay for it was with ads. I'd rather not have ads. So at first I was guilty, but I was why am I asking people to give me money? I mean, this doesn't feel right. And then I was I'm actually spending a significant amount of money to make this podcast. Not only is it the fees, not only is it the time, but I will buy something just to try it out so I can talk about it on the podcast. And finally, I'm at a point where I am fine with people giving me money, but I'm never going to demand it. I'm not going to encourage people to give me money, if that makes any sense.
Right, right.
So for you, if you wanted to turn this into a money-making thing, you would start thinking about Patreon, which is what all the YouTubers will tell you is where their money comes from. They're not making money from YouTube directly anymore. You get a little bit, but it's the Patreons that make it. And then, that's a voluntary thing. People do that because they want to, because you're giving them something they want. And how can you feel guilty about somebody wanting to give you something in return for you giving them what they want?
Right.
So
that is a very true thing.
Yeah. There's some philosophy here. It's just the dishonesty where I draw the line. You buy something that is garbage, but you're getting a 20% commission on it. So you tell people it's wonderful anyway. Once you're into that, then you are just trying to make money any way possible. And I don't want to watch you.
Yeah, I didn't want to be a shell for Raid Shadow Legends. That's pretty much it.
Right.
Yeah.
Athletic Greens, that's another one that
I don't use any of those products. I don't go to any of those places. I have been so fortunate to receive sponsorships from companies that have reached out to me, which was a brand new thing to me. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're kind of talking about the Yeah. Just kind of to kind of overarch this whole concept, this topic that we're talking about right now is just the feasibility of creating content and the ethics of receiving money for essentially a new job.
It is a job. Think of it as a job. You don't mind getting a paycheck from working on people's RVs?
No, absolutely not. Even though I desperately want to make it as financially possible for them as I'd like, but at the same time, I got to eat.
Yeah, right. You know? Right. So I think from what I'm hearing, and you know, I don't know you like somebody I've known for 20 years, but your ethics seem to be perfectly aligned with mine in the regards of what you primarily want to do is help people. However, you recognize that you also need to eat. And if those two things could align, that would be the best of all possible worlds.
That would be the lovely bit. Yeah. Now, something I have thought about, and I've been setting up a lot of like, I'm the person who likes to set up all the infrastructure beforehand and then release it out, because having like to cobble something together allows for just weird intermittence. So like I'm working on like merch, because people have asked for merch, which I think is such a lovely thing. And gosh, I need one of your stickers. I have missed every opportunity to get a sticker.
I'll get your address and
lovely. Yes. Just me trying to get some stickers. But yeah, so I've been setting up this website and everything and talking about Patreon. I don't have a Patreon, and I don't plan on having a Patreon specifically because they take a cut of the pay.
So does buying me a coffee. I mean, people don't know this, but you give me $5, I get about $4.15.
Right. And so I do have a buy me a coffee as well. But at the same time, I've started using Fourth Wall, and I don't think they take a commission. I think they take a commission off of merch.
Yeah.
But not off of donations. It's a weird system set up, and I'm trying to work on it, but I am always for giving more than I'm getting, which is always a hard feat.
And people will take advantage of you because of that, and you have to be careful.
Gosh, and it's so difficult. It's so difficult because I want to give the world and try and help as much as I can. It's hard to take, man. For me, it's hard to take. And I'm sure
me too. Oh, I totally get it. And you know, that's funny. That is kind of a van life ethos. I'm about to go to Van Fest next week. As I'm recording this, it is, what day is it? It's Sunday before Van Fest. So whenever you're listening to this, that's when this was recorded. And one thing that has come up in the talks about Van Fest is just how nice everybody is. These are people from all over the country and all different rigs and whatever. But the thing that attracts them to the event is, other than the vans and stuff, it's nice people. And this is what I've encountered almost exclusively in van life community. Yeah, there's jerks occasionally, but these are folks who want to live life on their own terms, who aren't trying to die with the biggest score. And I really appreciate that.
It depends on what you're scoring off of, too.
Well, right. I mean, I'm just talking about money. Yeah, I was like, hey, I died with $20 billion. Okay, so you wasted $20 billion that you could have actually used while you were alive. Good job.
Gosh, honestly.
So thank you, Sherm, for spending all that time with me and having such an interesting conversation. I always love when people bring up ethics because, well, I think we need a whole lot more ethics in the world. So thank you, Sherm, and I hope you guys got something out of that, too. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 291. Music, as always, is by Simon Wegg. I've got a whole lot of travel coming up, so things are going to be a bit disjointed. But if you need to get a hold of me for any reason, you can visit builttogo.com or just contact me directly at jeff@builttogo.com. Until next time, remember the words of Arden Vale, who said, "Gas prices rise like the tide, and still we go, because some distances are measured not in dollars, but in the need to keep moving."